Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program.
Luke Geary from Salvo's Legal. Luke, thanks for coming and joining us again.
Pleasure, Noel. Thanks very much.
And Luke, I think this evening you were interested in court proceedings. What happens when we look into courts, like the Pistorius case, the many stick, there's ICAC, there's all sorts of things like this. But that was the area that you're going to share with us some insight on how this might affect outcomes or affect the process of trials.
Yeah, we've got something called the principle of open justice, Noel, which is all about how there's a body of law that says that the justice system benefits when publicity is given to court proceedings, so that every man or woman in society has the opportunity to see the whole of the court process. And the idea is that transparency is fundamental.
Justice being seen to be done, in other
words. That's right. That's right. But I think, you know, we have the age of live video streaming via the internet. We have, in America, it's been a lot more common, certainly, than in Australia.
You had the O.J. Simpson case.
You had the Michael Jackson trials. We currently have in South Africa the Oscar Pistorius trial, which has had a lot of media attention. But also in Australia, we've got live video streaming. Each of the three royal commissions, which are still going on, are all live via the internet. And I just wanted to examine maybe some of the things that might arise from videoing for television purposes or live streaming for internet purposes, but also, I suppose, the interactivity with social media as a phenomenon and how that can put a slant perhaps on the experience of what's happening in court and what perceptions might come out of that.
And by that you mean both adverse for the good and for the bad?
Yeah, certainly.
What sort of things can go wrong? Because, I mean, we've been glued. Well, I've been a bit glued on the Pistorius trial, I've got to say. What can go wrong?
But I bet you've only seen the sensationalist bits. Ugh. I bet you haven't seen the boring bits that happen in ordinary course of litigation, the procedural, the administrative, the things that may not seem sexy or heightened in terms of activity or drama, but which can be profound in balancing the outcome. Now, in South Africa, they don't have juries. They have judge alone trials. And so you know, the drama and the acting, I guess, of the advocates is of less consequence than it can be in particularly America, but also in Australia to some extent. But you know, you see what the media is giving you to see, and it's highly edited. It's highly subjective to the particular journalist or reporter, whoever it is that is trying to tell their slant on the case. And you know, we have probably already formed a view in our, you know, whoever it is out there, and what their view of this celebrity and what's happened. Everyone's got their own opinion as to what's actually happened, but I bet no one has actually heard and seen all of the evidence.
All the detail, in other words.
Yeah, and you know, in the absence of that, it makes it very difficult to pass judgment.
Why is it a bad thing, though, in that we can't see it all, but we're still forming opinions?
Well, no doubt familiar to you is the foundational principle in the criminal law that everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Right. Mm.
And so it's, you know, through the sensationalist reporting via television of snippets, just, you know, small edited portions of a trial, it can lead to inferences as to whether a person's guilt or innocence. And I think that's a lot of the controversy between why courts in Australia largely haven't popularised televised court proceedings, because I think courts have been very cynical about the ability of, firstly, either the media to show the whole of the court proceeding and thereby give the full picture. Courts, I think, have been concerned that the whole picture is not going to be put, but also, no doubt, the media would not have a full audience for the whole of the court proceeding, because, sadly, and I say this as a lawyer who's sat in many, many, many trials over the last decade and some, a lot of it is not exciting. A lot of it is very important, but, you know, fairly nerdy evidentiary arguments and things that, unless you're a lawyer fascinated with a particular technical point, is going to be of no interest to you.
The real detail. I sat in some of the hearings in the Newcastle Maitland inquiry that was going on there, in the special inquiry. And there was a great deal of detail there. It surprised me just how much detail there was being talked
about. Yeah, and look, the royal commissions that are currently continuing, you have three. You have the commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse. You have the Home Insulation Royal Commission, and you have the Royal Commission into the unions. Each of the, and also in 2009, we had the Victorian Bushfires Royal Commission, which also was live streamed via the internet. Now, that's great in terms of getting as much as what the audience member in the courtroom sees. But the sad thing, I guess, still is that there's a further layer that you won't get, and that's necessarily the documents.
I think you've also spoken about the Johnny Cochran effect, is that?
Yeah, there's a large level of in jury trials, and I guess we probably can't forget, and I don't mean this cynically because
this is
you are part of the, the media, but it is often trial by media. So Johnny Cochran, grandstanding, and he got the desired effect and the outcome that he was looking for, and there was a level of drama there. And, you know, that's heightened to some extent when there is a much broader audience and then repetition of the story through televised accounts.
I think you've also mentioned you had concerns that witnesses could be cowed by cameras being present.
Yeah, you have a court situation for someone who's not used to going to court, and that's intimidating enough. Letting the witness, perhaps who's just an ordinary person who's accidentally seen something that they never, they're at the wrong place, the wrong time, and they witness something that's of profound consequence to another individual, you know, they may be very scared of giving evidence. They may be a very honest person, and the fear of being cross-examined on their observations and their memory is difficult enough, but then you amplify that by letting them know that there's a million viewers out there hanging on every word, and one can imagine quite easily how difficult that would be for a witness. But the other thing that arises is, and this is, I suppose, particularly so, in criminal cases, there is a there's a general rule that if you're a witness in a case, you're not allowed to be in court when another witness is giving evidence on a matter that may bear upon your evidence, because
it
you can tailor your evidence
yeah.
and it will contaminate your credibility. But when you have court cases which are televised or live streamed, you can see how complex that issue becomes, because if I'm giving evidence tomorrow and someone's giving evidence today on the same issue,
and you can see it,
and I can watch it either from the privacy of my home or anywhere if it's on the television or the internet, one can imagine how someone's evidence can be tailored accordingly. And you know, some people, particularly if they were dishonest, may be very good at hiding that.
I think you also raised the issue of what happens when claims are made that are later disproved or withdrawn are seen.
Yeah, I think this really is relevant in terms of I've observed in court cases where there is a media presence. There's kind of an allegation might be raised at 10 o'clock. The journalist types it up at 10:30, and by 11 the allegation may be withdrawn by a prosecutor or a defence attorney. And so the immediacy and social media, I think, probably is the main forum for these types of headlines to be raised. The immediacy of the reporting is something that, you know, 20 years ago just didn't exist, and the consequences for, such as, you know, the Pistorius case, the public perception of his innocence or otherwise can be swayed by someone's headline.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that once it's out there, it's, you know, if the allegation is subsequently withdrawn, it's not that common that there's a further headline that the allegation was withdrawn. It just gets moved on to the next headline.
Well, the Pistorius case is a particularly dramatic one, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's hard to watch sometimes, I've got to say, the bits that I've seen of it. But say something like ICAC, how do we squeeze? I mean, the thing, something like the Independent Commission Against Corruption, the very point of it is that it's public, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's right. And, you know, there is that principle of open justice, and I mentioned that earlier when we started, is that you know, the starting point is that any member of the public should be able to walk into any courtroom and observe freely everything that's going on. Now, it's not physically possible for every member of our society to have access, physical access to every courtroom, but with the age of internet and technology, it's very easy. And so that open justice principle would seem to be consistent with that. And, you know, there was a case now 25 years ago where John Fairfax Group and the local court had a case in the Court of Appeal. And in that decision, one of the judges made some observations and it was that open conduct of the court can cause great pain and loss to those touched by what is done and what is publicised, and it is, in my opinion, the function of the law and the obligation of the court administering it to avoid such pain and loss to the extent that it is possible to do so. The principle that the courts are to be open and the media may publish what is done in them is not an end in itself. For these reasons, proper to consider whether and in what way the open court principle can be maintained without unacceptable detriment to individuals and the proper administration of justice. So there is some level of balance between, you know, the importance of everyone having access, transparency, openness to seeing, you know, the biggest person in town being put on trial, or the most ordinary of men or women. But also, you know, that prejudice to them of having someone who may falsely allege something against you and having your reputation, your business or your family damaged by the allegation, which you then have to go to the effort of disproving.
Well, interesting point with ICAC in particular. It can do huge damage to reputations, and, you know, even just by association.
Yeah. Just being mentioned.
Well, Arthur Sinodinos, for example, stepping down by association, you mentioned.
That's right. So, you know, the connotations that arise from just being mentioned in the same category of persons who usually have been mentioned in that environment as having given evidence and being subject to very serious allegations can tar someone very permanently.
I think you also point out that subsequent challenges to rulings of corruption from something like ICAC can get far less reportage than what we saw in the first place. You remember the
conviction, but you may not hear about the appeal that's successful. So, you know, because it may be successful on a point of law that's not that interesting. But you know, I guess it depends on the nature of the reporting. But you know, the fact that anyone can participate in by observing on the internet or in person court proceedings doesn't necessarily always mean that they're going to understand them either.
Mm.
You know, it's hard enough for lawyers to understand some of the things that happen in courtrooms. So I guess there may not be a substitute for having somebody relay it to you.
So it's pros and cons you're laying out here, because on the one hand, there's some virtue in this greater publicity and transparency of the process. Mm. But on the other hand, there's a whole list of cautions you can make as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it's like many things in the law, it's a balancing exercise. And I think the courts in Australia have been keen to maintain and to highlight the principle of open justice, but also keen to ensure that if there is going to be a televised role within a court environment, that it's not at the discretion of the editor-in-chief, that it's at the discretion of the judge and of the court. And so we've seen some courts themselves allocate funding for certain cases or certain types of cases to audio-visual streaming, so that the court is the one that's in control rather than a private enterprise.
Well, it's interesting. Is there a certain type of trial or a nature of trial that should be seen more publicly or not seen more publicly? Can you group it?
There is a list of cases, I think, where there are exceptions to the open justice principle, and certainly one of the most common ones is anything involving children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children's court criminal proceedings or children's court care proceedings. That is significantly uncontroversially closed in almost every instance. But aside from that, the Supreme Court of New South Wales has recognised that the open justice principle may be not necessarily straightforward in cases involving trade secrets, secret documents or communications, cases including blackmail where public disclosure would undermine the whole purpose of the action, cases involving the need to maintain order in the court, some cases involving national security, cases where there's no substantial issue, but rather an administrative issue where a judge can deal with it in chambers, and cases where the court sits as a guardian of wards of the state or of the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's not a huge range of cases where the court would close the proceedings to the public. Everything else would appear to be open slather for public to attend, but if there's a case in Sydney and you live in Perth, it's physically going to be very difficult for you to do so, unless there is some medium which can facilitate that through technology.
Well, I've certainly found some of the stuff from the Royal Commission very helpful to be able to see it on the internet, to hear testimony being given.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you observe that as opposed to see the snippet headline, you'll see a very different thing, because you see both sides of any particular argument. In any of the Royal Commissions or in any court case, there will be two sides, sometimes more than two, to any particular contentious point. And I think there's no substitute for observing as an individual and weighing those up. And, you know, you may not be the judge, but you're someone who has the ability to assess that evidence and decide for yourself what you think of it.
Who makes the call to, you know, put these things on the internet to broadcast them, you know?
Well, the judge does. The judge. Whoever is in control of the proceedings will ordinarily do that, unless there is some law of parliament that particularly says a particular type of or a single proceeding should be televised, for example. But usually it's the presiding judge.
Luke Geary, thanks again.
Thanks, Noel.
Thanks for the insight.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.